Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream, where the extraordinary isn't fiction. It's the conversation. Today's guest has spent decades exposing truths governments would rather keep buried. Indeed, investigative journalist Ross Coulthard joins us to reveal what he's uncovered about UAPs, classified science, and why the disclosure story unfolding right now may be the most important story in human history. Ross is the senior special investigations correspondent for the News Nation TV News Network, where he presents the popular investigative TV show Reality Check. You can learn more in two places, going to newsnation.com, as well as on YouTube at Ross Coulthard Investigates. And with that, I bring Ross on to the Dare to Dream show. It's such an honor to have you here today.
G'day, Debbie. Good to meet you and nice to meet your guests.
Yes. Well, it's so interesting, your background, Ross, because once upon a time, you were on 60 Minutes as an investigative journalist. And in 2008, you uncovered one of the biggest ever medical scandals in Australia. You reported on wars, corruption, cover-ups, and now here you've been for a while, this big transition, this journalism with News Nation uncovering some of the biggest UAPET incidents. Tell us what made UAPs the story that you could not walk away from.
Debbie, the thing I've always used as a measure as a journalist is what I'm investigating a stonking good story? And you noted earlier on that the UAP mystery, that the secret of the existence of a non-human intelligence engaging with this planet, if that's true, and I believe it is, it's the biggest story in human history. And the thing that I started out as a journalist when I was investigating UAPs, I was leaving 60 Minutes and I was thinking to myself, I'm going to write a book about the issue that frankly, has been the most stigmatized, the most ridiculed, the most taboo subject in the entire years of journalism that I've performed. And that's UAPs. In every newspaper, every television network, every radio station that I've worked with, the subject of UAPs has always been ridiculed. And I have an admission, I have a guilty confession to make to you and your audience, Debbie, that when I first started out investigating the subject of UAPs, UFOs, I genuinely thought that what I would find at the end of the rainbow was just a secret US covert aerospace program, that we know there hasn't been much of new technology out of Area 51, the Nevada test range, for the last 30 years. I figured that the US was working on some secret plane. You know, we'd heard these rumors of the Aurora, a triangular-shaped craft that had been videoed and seen by witnesses. And so I assumed that at the heart of all of this, I was going to find a secret black world program that was a terrestrial, Earth-based program. And I used people that I'd met during my long career covering national security, defense, and intelligence. I reached out to very senior people in the Pentagon. And there was one moment where I found myself in a bar in Georgetown in Washington, D.C., and a very, very senior military official had, to my great pleasure, agreed to meet me over a beer. And after I confessed to him that I was interested in exploding the myth of UFOs and revealing that this was clearly, you know, in my arrogance, I said, you know, this is clearly some kind of black world program and I'm really interested in exposing it. I really want to show what the US has got up its sleeve. You know, what's this new technology it's hiding? And there was this kind of embarrassed pause. And the person sitting across the table from me said, Ross, it's real. And I said, what's real? And he said, UAPs, UFOs, little bug-eyed aliens. It's real. And I looked at him, and I think my world changed at that point. And it was a very long, slow, iterative process for me where I was essentially resisting an inherent journalistic bias, which I think is imbued in all mainstream legacy media journalists, that you must, and I don't know why we do this, always treat the UAP subject with ridicule and contempt. And the interesting thing was, everywhere I went, I was meeting people who are genuine patriots, good Americans, Brits, French, Australians, who were telling me this is real. That there is a phenomenon, there is a non-human intelligence that's engaging with this planet, and that we've been lied to. And we've been lied to as part of a coordinated psychological operations program by notably the CIA, the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense for the last 80 years. And I have to admit, it took me probably a year, 18 months to slowly come around to the realization. And I think the key turning point for me was through a succession of contacts, I developed a strategy of writing very polite letters to people who I kind of surmised from their backgrounds might have worked in this secret program. I was being told about the existence of a legacy alien craft retrieval program, a non-human intelligence technology retrieval program that the United States and other countries, including Russia and China, were privy to. And eventually, I heard back from one of the letters that I wrote. I wrote letters to each individual person that I thought might be useful, hundreds of them. And one of the people who wrote back to me, I can name him because he's since passed on, was a former head of science, technology, and development for the US Navy, like the top dog in R&D in the US Navy for 30 years, a guy called Nat Kobetz. And Nat, God bless him, I miss him terribly. He was a really lovely human being. And I could see he was wrestling with a question in his own mind about whether or not he was going to share stuff with me. And for a while, we just talked about his incredible career. He'd been involved in developing one of the first autonomous drones. It had crash-landed near President Bush's ranch in Texas. He had been involved in developing the lunar lander for NASA. He was brilliant. He was a brilliant materials scientist, absolutely knew his beans. And then finally, he knew what I was there for. He knew I was writing a book on UFOs. He said in his Brooklyn accent, Ross, ask me the question. That's a terrible American accent, by the way, Debbie, I apologize. And I said, okay, I will. I said, have you ever been read in to a UAP, alien technology craft retrieval program? And there was this kind of pregnant pause. And he said, yes. And my life changed from that point, because not only did he admit that he had been briefed that the US had retrieved non-human technology, that they had possession of multiple intact non-human craft, he also described how on one occasion he'd been taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, taken underground, and asked to examine what he said was an impossibly light piece of incredibly strong metal, which he said appeared to be a bulkhead from a much larger crashed craft. And he was asked to explain how the metals had been bonded. And when he looked at it under an electron scanning microscope, he said it was clear to him that whatever this was, it had been built at the atomic level, using a layering of atoms type building construction that we don't have the capacity to do yet on this planet. And he said this was alien technology, no doubt whatsoever. And I've always been very circumspect about how much Nat helped me because I wanted to protect him and his family while he was still alive. But sadly, he passed away a while back. And he's a great American patriot. He's a very decent human being. And we spoke extensively about the retrieval program. And he admitted to me, he said, Ross, there is no good reason why the public can't know. He said, there may be technology that we've developed that we need to protect, just like we protect thermonuclear weapons and the secrets of advanced weaponry. We don't want the bad guys getting access to that kind of technology. But he said, I think it's wrong that the public aren't being told that there is an advanced non-human intelligence that's been engaging with this planet for as long as we can remember, well before World War II. And he facilitated introductions for me to people that he knew. And I remember on one occasion I'd rented an apartment in Washington, D.C., very close to the Pentagon. And if the Pentagon knew who'd walked through my apartment, knocking on my door at 1 o'clock in the morning, coming to see me to brief me about what they knew about the legacy program, they would have conniptions. But these people were and are patriots. They're people who care. They think that you, the public, have a right to know how your money is being spent. And for me, as an investigative journalist, the question you asked me, which I've been answering in a very long-winded way, is, how did I get into, why did I get into this UAP subject? I got into this subject by complete arrogance, arrogant self-belief that I was going to disprove the whole UAP nonsense. And I found myself getting sucked down the rabbit hole that this is a reality. It's true. And I still get lampooned and ridiculed by a lot of my media colleagues, both here in Australia and overseas in America. And they don't know what I know. And it's shocking that there really is this massive, multi-decade-long cover-up of what I think is not only the biggest secret in human history, but a secret that goes a long way to explaining who we are, what we humans are here for. Is there life after death? Spiritual ideas of why are we here? Do we survive death? And I found it the most profound and fascinating investigation of my career, and it's propelled me into a new and exciting audience that I love. Millions and millions of people are engaging with my show. I've been taken aback by the volume and the passion of the interest.
Waiting for
And
this information, this import, hungry for this information. And I think the book you're talking about, Ross, that you wrote is your best-selling book called In Plain Sight. Is that
correct.
correct?
Yes,
And
that's right. Yeah.
also, when you're talking about this has gone on, of course, I know that this has gone on since the beginning of time, but regarding the legacy program that you brought up and a little bit more linear for folks who don't know, David Grush explicitly was citing the 1933 Magenta. This is this Italian recovery of spacecraft as an early international example of what later would also become this pattern of local recovery, diplomatic intelligence handling, transfer to US custody. So it's not Roswell, the 1940s, which was the inception of all of what began with the governments getting involved and the secrecy and the claiming of the materials, but actually in 1933.
It's actually earlier. David Grush, for those in your audience who don't know, is a very senior, highly respected former US intelligence official who was cleared to nearly 2,000 of the most secret secrets in the United States military and defense community. And he worked for the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, the National Reconnaissance Office, and for a while he was the UAP liaison. He was working with the UAP task force that was secretly investigating UFOs for the Pentagon. This is the thing that's, I think, quite deceitful and ridiculous, Debbie, is that At the same time that the public was and still is being told by the Pentagon that it has no evidence of extraterrestrial engagement with this planet, it's very selective in the language it uses, extraterrestrial, not non-human intelligence. Very important distinction. There were people like David inside the Pentagon working with other people like Jay Stratton, another friend of mine who was the head of the UAP task force, who was secretly investigating UAPs because this had become an urgent national security priority for the Defense Department. And what David told me exclusively on television in June of 2023, when he went public, was that he uncovered the existence of a legacy crash retrieval and reverse engineering program that was being funded secretly and probably illegally with public money outside of the oversight of the Congress. And it had been operating for at least 80 years. And one of the crashes that he referred to was the 1933 Magenta UFO crash that took place in northern Italy, near Milan, where a craft was recovered by the fascist Mussolini regime. And while the Nazis obviously became aware of the existence of this craft, it was never physically handed over to Hitler's Nazis, but it was retained by the Italians and studied by Nazi scientists. And it probably explains a lot of the reason why there's been so much speculation about the Nazis developing UFO technology, notably Die Glock, the bell. And we know that with the connivance of people like Jesus James Angleton, who went on to become the head of counterintelligence for the CIA, Alan Dulles, who was the Swiss-based OSS operative, who later became the director of the CIA, this craft, the Magenta craft, was delivered by the Vatican at the intercession of the Vatican to the OSS, the overseas spy service that the US had set up during World War II, and the Office of Special Services, I think it was called, and it was delivered to the United States. And it was one of the first craft, not the first, I'm told, that was retrieved by the United States and became the subject of an attempted reverse engineering operation. And there's been multiple retrievals of non-human craft since. And the amazing thing, the thing I feel really ashamed of as a journalist, is we've all made fools of ourselves. They've made monkeys of us for the last 80 plus years by so adeptly running a disinformation operation that taught us in the media to treat this with stigma, to, you know, ridicule and taboo, when in fact it's real. It's absolutely real. And to this day, if you walk into the newsroom of CBS, ABC, NBC, PBS, WashPost, New York Times, any of the great newspapers, the great media institutions in the legacy media of America, 99% of the journalists there will treat the whole subject of UAPs with derision and default scorn and taboo hilarity, when in fact it's real. It's absolutely real. And I've got first-person sources on the record. Most recently, Jake Barber and David Grush.
Yes, absolutely. So if tomorrow full disclosure happened, Ross, what do you think would shock the public the most?
I don't buy into the idea that the public would be ontologically shocked by the revelation of the existence of aliens. I have two beautiful daughters, and both of them are psychologically very in tune with the idea that there must be other non-human intelligences out there in the universe. And even establishment science accepts this, that there must be, statistically, on the Fermi paradox, you know, the number of planets that have clearly habitable ecosystems, which must have produced similar life to ours and must, over a process of evolution, have developed some kind of advanced technology and civilization. It's absolutely inevitable that there are civilizations and intelligences out there that are aware of our existence and I think almost certainly have visited this planet. And why we discount that probability, to me, is the biggest mystery of all. It's quite clear, based on circumstantial evidence, and admittedly, you know, people often sneer and say, you know, where's the first-hand evidence? Why haven't the craft landed on the White House lawn? Well, in 1952, they didn't land on the White House lawn, but they did a
They
massive
flew over it.
flyover over Washington, D.C. You know,
Exactly.
I think what we're seeing at the moment is the beginning of a tipping point, a moment in human civilization where we realize we are not alone. And I think it's a folly. It's actually irresponsible of the media, which purports to be the guardian and the accountability check on government and institutions of power, to ignore this issue. And I've come to the realization that I have a responsibility as a journalist that has uncovered this mystery to communicate it far and wide to the general public, because I think the message fundamentally at the heart of it is not a frightening one. I don't think people would be frightened, to come back to your question. One of the key issues that I'm still wrestling with is the allegation that people have been abducted, that there's been experiments, medical experiments, conducted by both non-human beings and allegedly in collusion with the US military, some kind of experimentation on humans. Is there a hybridization program? There are people like Whitley Strieber, for example, who allege that he's adamant that his sperm was taken. I talk to many women who tell me privately that they've had phantom pregnancies that have just disappeared, or they know that their eggs have been taken in abduction, so-called abduction events. Something's going on, and I find that pretty scary. I think we humans find the idea of intrusive medical intervention without permission, without, you know, the proper authority, to be quite horrible and illegal and upsetting. But is it a malevolent intelligence that's doing this for bad reasons? I somehow doubt it. There are isolated pockets of evidence to suggest that there is a malevolent non-human intelligence that has done bad things to humans. There have been the Colares incidents, Colares, in Brazil, about 50 years ago, where a Brazilian military investigation investigated the fact that villages in northern Brazil were the subject of quite horrific mutilations and attacks by purported non-human beings using highly advanced technology. And this was investigated and corroborated by the Brazilian military at the time. So I don't think there's that much to be frightened of. What I'm more frightened of isn't the NHI. I'm more frightened of why our governments are keeping this secret. Because I'm
Yes.
very sure both the US, Russia, Chinese, British, French, and Israeli governments know all about this. And I don't know why they're keeping it secret. That's the thing I find most sinister. The thing that worries me most is that we're trying to weaponize technologies that I think, frankly, would resist weaponization. Wouldn't it be a tragedy for the human race if, as has been alleged to me, we are acting offensively, aggressively, violently against non-human beings who bear us no ill will
Yes.
in order to steal their technology? Jake Barber, a former intelligence operative who was working as a non-official cover intelligence operative for a major aerospace company at a known US government range, admitted to me on the record in January last year that he was involved in a program that almost certainly involved the retrieval of non-human technology. And he witnessed and sadly participated in events where almost certainly offensive, aggressive, violent weaponry was used to down non-human craft. These are real allegations on the record from people like himself and David Grush and others. We are sadly the primitive apes, and the beings that we are encountering appear to be conducting themselves exemplarily, with good, honorable intentions most of the time towards human beings. I actually don't think there's much to be frightened of, other than the realization for some people that might be a bit of a shock that we're not alone. I welcome it. I welcome humanity becoming part of a broader universe of intelligent, advanced beings. It might be good for us humans to be humbled a little by the realization that we are not the dominant apes at the top of the pyramid, that there are other advanced beings, probably more spiritually and certainly more technologically advanced than we are.
Absolutely. Wow, beautiful, comprehensive, and much appreciated. And we're going to take a quick pause, my friends. I want to invite you a little deeper into this work. I have something special for you. If you are fascinated to know what your galactic origins are, what starseed are you? Where are you from? I have an amazing starseed video and report as my gift to you so you can learn more about your galactic ancestry. Go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed, and that's debbiedashinger.com/starseed. Also, Ross is going to be speaking and presenting at the Los Angeles Conscious Life Expo. That's February 20th through the 23rd. I will also be there. I'll be moderating panels. I will be in their play on Saturday night with Jimmy Church and Danny and Brinkley. I'll also be speaking. So much beauty takes place there. So much wisdom, so much information. Come meet us in person, hear us speak, and go to debbiedashinger.com/CLE for your tickets. All of the links will be in the show notes. If you would like to join the adventure of a lifetime going to Greece and Turkey, I am speaking aboard a mystery school at sea. This is a cruise. There are extraordinary speakers, and we're going to all the ancient sites. You can sign up. There's Laura Eisenhower, there's Debbie Solaris, Geraldine Orozco, myself, Neil Garr, and many more. MysterySchoolAtSea.com. And finally, if this conversation means something to you, go ahead and hype it, subscribe, like the video, leave us a comment. I do read them. It helps us to reach way more star seeds and light workers all around the world. Let's support us as well. You, our community. We love seeing that after we publish a video. Please take a moment and do that. So, Ross, coming back, you had mentioned David Grush, 2023, Jake Barber, 2025, where things are clearly shifting. And recently, and most notably, David Grush asserted that former Vice President Dick Cheney played a central role in overseeing the legacy program. And Cheney's name has circulated anyway within the UFO UAP research circle for years. But this really marks the first time that it was spoken publicly by someone like David Grush, a former intelligence officer. And he has direct knowledge of the issue. And also you, very notably, Ross, you independently referred and referenced Dick Cheney in a similar context. And you are lending additional weight to the consistency of these claims. So tell us what you know about legacy, what you know about Cheney's involvement. And I might just say, I thought it was amazing that Grush referred to Dick Cheney as Darth Vader. Those are very powerful words. Tell us what you know.
I was told by multiple people who are first-hand operatives inside the secret legacy retrieval and reverse engineering program, people who have not yet identified themselves publicly, that Cheney was one of the principals, if not the principal, overseeing the secret program. The interesting thing is, a lot of people assume that this was being done in his authority as an operative of the US government, in his role in defense or intelligence. That's not the case. This was all done off the books, behind the scenes, in his capacity as a principal of certain major aerospace institutions. One of the things that I think people have missed with the whole story of the legacy retrieval reverse engineering program is that, especially under President Nixon in the 1970s, when the FOI, the Freedom of Information laws, for the very first time were being brought in, and when Congress suddenly discovered it, he had power to oversight the executive arms of the government after Watergate, there was a realization inside the executive government that it was no longer tenable to keep the biggest secret of all inside public institutions. Yes, the large amounts of the program had been hidden inside the Defense Department in so-called waived, unacknowledged special access programs, and inside the Department of Energy, which of course is excluded from a lot of the oversight of freedom of information and even from the public scrutiny of certain congressional committees. But a decision was made, I understand, inside the Nixon administration to privatize a lot of this. And so one of the big dilemmas at the moment, and one of the arguments that I've actually been having privately with people from private aerospace, is the issue of eminent domain. Because as you would know, Debbie, and a lot of your audience would know, there's been legislation proposed before the Congress that would essentially have allowed the confiscation of UAP technology that was being held by both government and private aerospace to ensure that, if not properly disclosed and oversighted by Congress, the correct and legally constitutionally required oversight that requires that Congress be properly briefed and read into these secrets be reinstated. And so there was going to be a proposal in legislation that there be confiscation of technology being held, notably, particularly by private aerospace companies like Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, and Boeing. And this didn't happen because of intervention inside Congress by self-interested people who were victims of the lobby from the national security community who didn't want this secret out. And at the heart of all of that was Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney was one of the principals in the legacy program who made sure this stayed secret. And it's interesting because one of the things that I try and do as a journalist is I try and put myself in the brain of these people who make decisions inside executive government, often out of, I think, the very noblest idea in their heads that they're doing the right thing, the most decent thing, the most honorable thing. And I do think people like Dick Cheney and the people who are still preserving the secret today inside the CIA and the Defense Department and the Department of Energy, I do think that they think and genuinely believe that what they're doing is for the very best reasons, that the public and Congress in particular can't be trusted with this secret. And so we've got this ridiculous situation where good people like Chris Mellon, Lou Elizondo, David Grush, they've gone public with their concerns that Congress is not being properly briefed, as is constitutionally required, mandated by the articles of the Constitution. It's not being properly briefed, and there isn't the oversight about the billions, if not trillions, of dollars that have been spent on this legacy retrieval and reverse engineering program. And so what's been happening in the last couple of years since people like David Grush and Jake Barber have gone public is there's been a scramble by the defense and intelligence community to belatedly bring some trusted and, dare I say, manipulable figures inside the Congress back into the loop. And so there's long been a process in the oversighting of executive government where if a secret is so secret, it was developed that the so-called Gang of Eight, who are very, very senior members of both sides of politics, could be read in to the most sensitive secrets of all. And I'm aware that there have been certain senators in particular who've been read in to the program. And I'm very frustrated with them because one or two of them have been people who've been avowedly pro-disclosure, pro-transparency on the UAP issue. And they've bought into the idea that for the moment at least, this needs to be kept secret, that the public shouldn't be told because of the potential, they argue, that it would benefit our foreign adversaries like Russia and China, potential foreign adversaries, if this was to leak and if details of weaponry and technology that we've developed from these recovered technologies was to somehow cross across to the enemy. What instead I'm being told, and this is the thing I find most frightening about the whole issue, from people within the program, they are genuinely concerned that America is losing its strategic edge because of this secrecy, because there is this obsessive compartmentalization and alpha male obsession with keeping this secret from Congress. They, in turn, have become a kind of a feedback loop on themselves. They're telling themselves, this is terrible that it should ever become public. We need to protect America's interests by keeping this secret. And this is the mantra they're telling themselves, when in fact people inside the program who have first-hand knowledge of what we've got and what we've recovered and what we've done with it are telling me that humanity is being denied fantastic technologies that could benefit
Yes.
all of humankind. And the tragedy for them is that what we're doing instead is we're trying to weaponize these technologies to develop a strategic advantage over the Russians and the Chinese. Whereas, in fact, what's happening is the Chinese particularly are stealing the march on the United States because they've stolen as much from us as they can possibly steal. And the Russians, frankly, grossly under-resourced and focused on Ukraine as they are for their own self-defense, they do have recovered technology and they are trying to reverse engineer it. And note this, note that at different times, President Trump has hinted very strongly that it has some kind of super weapon, that he's been briefed about the existence of weaponry that other potential foreign adversaries don't have, which would make the United States a very formidable adversary in the event of any geopolitical conflict. Ironically, Putin has said exactly the same thing. So you have two leaders of two of the most powerful and frighteningly well-armed nations in the planet, the two superpowers, Russia and the United States, both gloating publicly that they have super weapons. And we're not talking here about hypersonic weapons. We're talking about weapons that they specifically admit the existence or the knowledge of which has been held back from public knowledge. And I believe very strongly from my sources that what we're talking about there, what they're talking about there, is retrieved non-human technology. And I think it's really interesting that Pete Hegseth and his restructuring of the Defense Department is flagging that one of the areas he's going to be focusing on is space dominance and not only hypersonic weapons, but also plasma weapons, directed energy weapons. Where is the technology for that coming from? That's a very interesting question.
And it's so difficult as we navigate this party line that we're being fed by government. First of all, that this doesn't exist. And second of all, that what maybe is being leaked exists, the preponderance that it could be dangerous, this existence of non-human technology and beings, when in fact the revolutionary science that's been retrieved and monopolized in secret is here while humanity faces energy issues, climate issues, existential issues. And the question is, what are the ethics? What is the moral weight here for individuals, whether it's the deep state or these secret government programs who are doing this in the face of what humanity is facing right now?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, I was really concerned when I saw that Donald Trump was going into the Venezuela. And I'm a real fan of the analysis that's been done by multiple people suggesting that America's invasion of Venezuela is all about preserving the dominance of the petrodollar, and that people ignore the fact that back in the 1970s, Henry Kissinger negotiated with the Saudis in particular to ensure that the only currency in which oil could be traded in the Middle East was the US dollar, and that that has ensured the dominance and the liquidity of the US dollar and has allowed the US to go into massive multi-trillion dollar debt, debt that is absolutely unsustainable. When you think about it, the way the US executive government conducts itself is it knows it never has to pay that debt back. Why is that? And I think a large part of the reason why I think the United States is not motivated at the moment to make UAP disclosure is because the moment you make UAP disclosure, you undermine the dominance of the US petrodollar. It's as simple as that. It's all about the dollar.
It is all about the dollar. Amazing. And also because, from what I understand, in these secret government programs, they have already invested well over $1 trillion in these programs and ongoing. So I'm hoping more and more, much like you, that this becomes more in our hands. We become the whistleblowers. The whistleblowers, hopefully protected, start stepping forward more. And I'm curious about you, Ross, and your safety. So while you are reporting around these subjects and the level of people that you get to speak with, have you had any threats? Have you had any worries? Or have you remained safe?
Look, I mean, I've done far worse stories where I'm dealing with dangerous people covering wars and outlaw motorcycle gangs and criminals than the issue of the UAP disclosure. I'm not naive. I mean, David Grush has alleged, and other people have alleged to me, that people have been murdered to preserve the UAP secret. And I'm very careful to make sure that I don't offend national security laws, either in my country or in the US, because if I am leaked something top secret, if I am leaked a document that's top secret, I have to be extremely careful and make sure I don't abuse national security laws in doing so. But yeah, I mean, I suppose there's always the risk of some nutjob alpha male who thinks that he's got an overzealous application of authority to take it upon himself to try and restrain somebody like me. And that's why I have prepared, as has Jake Barber and David Grush, a dead man switch, which sounds melodramatic, but basically, in the event of my death, certain information would be released that would be highly embarrassing, naming names and identifying institutions and people and locations. And so, one of the things I repeatedly warn the US government is, people in the executive arm of government are often incredibly naive. One of the things that first shocked me when I became a journalist was the practice of leaking. Governments leak all the time. And often, funnily enough, in executive government, the very person who's complaining about the leak, the minister or the secretary of the department, they're the people who did the leaking. And they're using their complaint and their agitation about that leak to hide the fact that they were responsible for leaking it to someone like me in the first place. Governments leak like a sieve. And a lot of people have complained to me, oh, well, you know, if this was all real about UFOs, why hasn't it leaked? And the irony is, it has. It's leaked for years. There's been many whistleblowers that have come forward. One of the most prominent was a former founding director of the CIA, Roscoe Hillenkoetter, who went public in the 1950s with the fact that there was this recovered technology, that the United States was hiding its knowledge of non-human intelligence. He came and he went, God bless him. What's happened is the national security state has actually been able to control a lot of the institutions of the media by using a very effective tool, ridicule. One of the worst things that can happen to a journalist is making a silly mistake, making an egregious error based on a malicious source. And so one of the things I'm extremely careful about is getting multiple corroboration of things before I make an allegation. And it took me a long time to come to the realization that I could feel safe that the legacy retrieval and reverse engineering program is a reality. I'm in no doubt that it exists. I'm in no doubt that there are multiple undisclosed underground facilities in the United States where non-human technology is being worked on, where biologics, non-human beings' remains are being worked on, and where live aliens have been held. This is a reality. And the thing that really gets me is when you see these stories being reported in mainstream legacy media or what passes for it these days. I mean, we're seeing at the very moment when we need more than ever before an aggressive, investigative, well-resourced media that can probe and ask hard questions, the major terrestrial TV networks, CBS, ABC, NBC, PBS, all of the major newspapers, the flagship newspapers, the mastheads of great investigative journalism in the United States, they're all in terminal decline. And we get much higher ratings on Reality Check. We get tens of millions of views for some of our stories than CBS 60 Minutes. And CBS 60 Minutes has done probably, I think, two stories on UFOs in their time in the last few years since the 2017 New York Times story. What is the highest rating story ever on the New York Times website? The 2017 UFO story. Why does the New York Times not do more investigative stories into the legacy reverse engineering and retrieval program? Because they're not any longer free media institutions. They're captive to the sources that provide them with the information they so desperately want to report on Ukraine, on the Middle East. They think that their audience want those stories so badly that they turn a deliberate blind eye to the UAP issue, even though they know it's real, because they're worried that the tap will be turned off if they report it. I've actually had reporters say that to me from within institutions like the Times. This is a story a lot of the mainstream media is fearful of reporting. I guess to come back and address your question, do I get worried? Yeah, sometimes I do get worried. I get very worried for the whistleblowers who speak to me. I go to enormous lengths to try and protect their confidentiality. I use communication systems and techniques that I've been taught by spies, people who've protected the most sensitive national security secrets of my country's intelligence community and yours. This is a really serious issue. There are people who are dedicated to getting this story out, who want people like me to slowly and surely reveal the reality. And the reason why they want that revealed is because they think it's an inherent good for humanity for this truth to be told. They think the secrecy is a cancer, that it's confounding humanity's understanding of itself, and that we would largely lose our differences once we understand that we are truly not alone in this universe. That's the essential conundrum behind this mystery, is that once this mystery is unraveled and solved and resolved, I think humanity will be on a much better path. People will forget their differences. Will Russians and Chinese really think of themselves as Russians and Chinese, American or Australian, if they know that there are highly advanced, intelligent, benevolent beings out there that have our best interests at heart and want us to be part of a broader community?
Absolutely. And I think many of us are so ready to enter this galactic community and be a part of it, be also a benevolent part of this galactic community. So well said. Ross, tell us, how can people find you? What's next for you? And tell us also, what are you doing at Conscious Life Expo?
I did ask myself that question. I had a lot of friends saying to me, it's very woo, Roscoe. You know, are you sure you want to do this? And I'm, as I get down into this subject, I found myself more drawn to the spiritual, to an examination of consciousness, spiritual ideas. And I think the UAP mystery, are we alone, is intrinsically tied to who are we as humans? What is our purpose? Why are we here? What is Earth? What does it mean to be human? Are we in a holographic universe? What is consciousness? How do humans express free will? Is our consciousness just a product of a meat computer, our biological bodies? Or are we tapping into something else? Do we have the capacity to exert a connection with a non-local consciousness? Those are ideas that I know Conscious Life Expo explores, and I think a lot of people are frightened of exploring those ideas. And sure, there are crazies and nut jobs in every conference, and I don't mind. I'm quite happy to meet them and engage with them and see what I think of them. But at the same time, there are serious and dedicated and interesting people who have got genuine ideas that they want to explore, and we should be exploring these. I think I would be hypocritical if I didn't. And more importantly, if people want to find me and see my work, they can see on YouTube, they can see a new show, a new channel that I've created called Ross Coulthart Investigates. And I also have my News Nation work with Reality Check. If you just go on YouTube, Reality Check, Ross Coulthart, you can read my book In Plain Sight. And you can reach out to me. I invite people to email me. I have an email address on Proton Mail, which is an encrypted email server, muckraker, muckraker, at protonmail.com. I welcome anyone with any dark secrets they want to share.
Beautiful. Well, here at the end, Ross, this is Dare to Dream. What do you next dare to dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
I dream optimistically of a united humanity that is aware of its commonality as a human species, endowed with intelligence, and I think imbued with some significance in a universe that is full of other beings with advanced intelligence, probably far more advanced than us. And I look forward to hopefully a transition time. It may not come in my lifetime, I hope it does, where humanity can become part of a broader universe of intelligent beings that are compassionate, benevolent, and no longer warlike and driven by evil, malevolent intention. We have to forget our differences. I find it incredible in this day and age that we are still fighting trench warfares in Europe. It's shocking. And I worry at this very time, here we are on a precipice of some of the most dangerous geopolitical events in our history. We are right now on the tipping point for humanity. And I guess my dream is that we go in the right direction.
Folks, I end today's show with this reminder. The real story isn't that something unknown may be in our skies. It's that humanity is standing at the edge of a truth we've postponed for generations and choosing whether we're actually ready to face it or not. I hope you'll stand with us and be as ready as we are. Next week on Dare to Dream for Curious Souls, connecting with extraterrestrial life, higher dimensions, and ancient shamanic wisdom, I will be speaking with Billy Carson and also with Daryl Anka. Please subscribe to this number one transformation conversation. Thank you for joining us today on Dare to Dream.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, DebbieDashinger.com. That's DebbieDashinger. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, your number one transformation conversation.